The number one Costa Rica real estate and investment podcast, bringing you experts from all over Costa Rica.
Good morning, guys, and welcome to Costa Rica Real Estate and Investments, episode 134, with me, your host, Richard Beckson. Today, we're going to be talking to Bill Graff, founder and CEO of the Onda Group. They've been developing some of the, I would say, coolest and hip hotels in the most unique areas of Costa Rica. So far, they've opened Playa Grande and are now developing their Monteverde property. So we're going to be talking to Bill about his journey and his advice when basically investing in Costa Rica and particularly in small boutique hotels. I know quite a lot of you guys have reached out to us personally to help you buy or invest or just advise you on, you know, what's it's like to build, develop, own, operate, and then also resell boutique hotels. As I think a lot of you are aware, I have a lot of experience doing that, having managed over $1 billion of luxury vacation sales to Costa Rica and developed, you know, and guided some of Costa Rica's top boutique hotels here. So it's going to be great talking to Bill and just kind of getting a conversation going about that. So remember, if you guys want to reach us on anything, you can reach out to us on info@investingcostarica.com. That's info@investingcostarica.com. If it's anything from investing in a condo to developing land to buying a hotel here, we basically kind of hold your hand through the whole process. It's interesting sometimes when being out with clients that they're like, wow, I didn't realize that you guys really offer this amount of this, you know, this wide amount of services, but we can hold your hand right from the beginning all the way to the end, even the build, and then getting the thing cash flowing as well. So remember, if you want to reach out to us, you can info@investingcostarica.com. Let's get straight into the podcast. Good morning, Bill. How are you doing?
I am doing well. How are you?
Very good. I appreciate you taking the time to join us on the podcast. I know that you're busy running, or should I say, kind of overseeing one hotel in Playa Grande and looking to open another in Monteverde, which we'll get to further on in the podcast, but appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you so much for having me and very nice to meet you.
Awesome. Well, I mean, let's just get an update. I mean, again, I'm sure that you see some kind of data points, you know, having the property in Playa Grande. But, you know, I mean, with current, let's say, you know, market conditions, which, you know, seem to be changing week to week here. I mean, what are you seeing happening kind of from your side? I mean, what are you seeing happening in the country?
Yeah. So, you know, this conversation is happening at a really interesting time because, as you mentioned, we have one hotel in Playa Grande that we've had operational since January of 2020, so about 15 months of operating history. And then we have a brand that we've sort of been at for 2 or 3 months now. And we're actually seeing very different performance from the two locations. Playa Grande this year is a bit softer than last year. Yep. We had a good, but not great, January and February. Candidly, March has been softer than last year. We expect that we'll be, you know, down slightly. I expect that that's probably due to airline ticket prices. And so, as I'm sure you probably know, ICT publishes the international arrivals data. It's on a 2 or 3 month lag. I'm very curious to see what that looks like because that's my running hypothesis. That being said, in Playa Grande, we have very strong demand, call it from now through November, from private groups. So this is corporate retreats, weddings, yoga retreats, things like that, doing whole hotel buyouts. But yeah, it's interesting. Tourist demand there has been light. That being said, Monteverde has been cranking. And so we're in the old operator system, and we can see how they're doing this year relative to prior years. And it's looking like 2023 will be their best year probably, I think, since 2018 or 2019. And so, you know, for those people who don't know, right, I mean, Playa Grande is in Guanacaste. That draws more heavily from an American tourist market, people flying into the Liberia airport, whereas Monteverde kind of draws equally from both the San Jose airport and Liberia and tends to have a little bit more of an international population or visitor population. So you get more Europeans, more backpackers. It's a bit more varied, people who are a bit sort of less sensitive to overall travel demand. So yeah, it's interesting. Sort of lighter than expected in Playa Grande, stronger than expected in Monteverde.
But still good.
Still good. Yeah.
We would say lighter than 2022, but it's still good. I mean,
it's hard, right? Because we don't have a ton of great data in Playa Grande. And I think 2022 was an absolute home run of a year, right? But given that it was our first year, we had nothing to compare it to. So, you know, slightly lower than last year, but by no means, you know, not a good year. Let me put it that way.
Bill, in Playa Grande, would you say your typical clients are digital nomads, kind of more younger people in their 20s, 30s?
I would say our typical clients are definitely younger, 20s, 30s, and 40s. You know, we don't get a ton of true digital nomads, right? And I make a distinction between, you know, a digital nomad in my mind is somebody who is probably self-employed or employed by a very small organization and who works on the road, you know, most of 365 days of the year. We don't get many of them. We do get more people who I would say fall into the remote worker bucket. You know, these are people who work for a company, get a paycheck, have a boss, you know, may not be their own boss. But do have the flexibility to work remote. And so these are people who are coming down and are either working all of a 9 to 5 or maybe half of a 9 to 5, kind of doing a work play holiday. But really where we found success is marketing to people who want to come. They're primarily on vacation. They're doing vacation-y things. They're out and about, but they need that safety net of knowing that they have really great internet and a place to work, i.e. a co-working facility, that like if they need to take a call or if something comes up while they're down with us for a week or so, that they'll be able to get it done and they're not going to have to tell their boss, oh, sorry, you know, I'm in Costa Rica, the internet's spotty. It's mostly those sort of like remote working professionals that we see.
I mean, the only reason I asked that was just because, again, it's interesting because most hotels, and I mean, you mentioned Monteverde Arenal, but even beach hotels, that 2023 is looking even bigger than 2022. I just wonder if, again, it's, but the majority of hotels, that I'm talking to are kind of, ADRs of $500, a night plus, which is kind of more that luxury and can afford a, $1,000 plane ticket. Whereas, maybe again, it's flights or are those people being recalled to work? Because a lot of people are like, dude, you got to come back to work now. Like, I need you in the office 2 or 3 days a week.
People could have been out of the office for 3, 6 months last year, and you see the pendulum swinging a little bit back towards you know, be in the office, be in your chair. I'd be interested to know. I mean, because we do have access to some data that shows ADRs and occupancy data, you know, for the region that we're in. So that would be, you know, Flamingo, Playa Grande, Tamarindo, Avellanas. And the data that we've seen there would suggest that that whole chunk, again, maybe excluding the very high end of the market, ADRs in excess of $500 a day. But, you know, everything sub $500, I think, is struggling a bit, or I shouldn't say struggling, but down relative to last year. You know, we have a number of friends who live in Tamarindo, and in, you know, this is highly anecdotal, but you know, everybody that we talk to is kind of asked, like, you know, man, it's a bit funky. It's just different from last year. Where last year, I think there were times when Tamarindo was so full that actually in Playa Grande, we were getting Tamarindo overflow traffic. You know, the one time that comes to mind was when they did the BPM Music Festival. We had a ton of people that couldn't even find a room in Tamarindo that were coming to stay with us. And there's just been less of that this year. It happens, but just not as frequently.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, for the data that I'm seeing, Costa Rica will have the largest number of arrivals in Jan, Feb, and March. I mean, those planes are full. We need more planes to Costa Rica, to somewhat
No,
drive those prices
and
down.
that's what I struggle to sort of rectify with, is I look at the ICT data, right? And particularly for Liberia, I think January of 2023, if I recall correctly, was the single biggest January they've ever had on record. Right, pre-COVID, post-COVID. So January was massive. I expect that February will be massive. I'm interested to see what happens in March.
Well, I mean, just kind of switching gears here to the more the investment side. I mean, you've invested in Costa Rica. I mean, what would your advice? And I mean, this is a pretty probably wide question, but what would be your advice to anyone looking to invest in Costa Rica?
Step one, take your time. Do not be in a hurry. You can buy something very quickly here. And now I haven't had to sell anything here yet, but my understanding is that when you go to sell, it takes a little bit longer. You know, it gets done. But come down here and really do your homework. This is not something you can do from a laptop or on your phone from the United States or Canada or anywhere else. You know, I would really recommend coming and if you're looking at a certain area, spending at least a month, if not 2 or 3, in the area that you're looking, so that you can really get a sense of, you know, within a specific geography. You know, let's just take Tamarindo as an example, because people are familiar with it, right? Like, you know, there's all sorts of different little streets and areas that you can be in Tamarindo. And unless you spend a significant amount of time there walking around, you know, living in the day of a visitor or a resident, depending on the type of real estate that you're looking at investing in, you're not going to know where a really great place is, or where a not so great place is, or where the hidden gems are, right? Or where the real values are. And you just can't get that from a listing. So take your time. Come down here and do it in person. And my third thing is get a fantastic attorney. You really, really do need a fantastic attorney. It's not an area to get cheap. It's not an area to be rushed. I would come down, I would meet a couple folks in person. I would listen to people who've done business here and get recommendations from them. But having a really great attorney will make a world of difference.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how many people I speak to that I love to use the expression that a penny wise and pound foolish, you know.
Exactly.
They would not do it in their home country, but they're willing to do it, you know, in Costa Rica because they kind of feel like they want to get a deal or they can do it kind of cheaply of like, you will get screwed quicker here than in any other place in the world.
Yes. You know, 110%, you know, double, triple everything. You know, we have an expression that we use at our company. It's, I think it's an old Russian expression, but it's trust, but verify.
Oh, I use it all the time.
You know, it's not that I don't trust you, but I am going to double check everything, right?
So. Yeah, ask three people. If two give you the same answer, then like, yeah, I mean,
probably all right. But yeah, if one person tells you something, don't rely just on that one data point. Please.
I've seen it so many times, but what are some of the biggest mistakes that you've seen people make? I mean, beyond of course, what has been some of the stuff that you've seen where you're like, wow, I just can't believe people have done that.
I mean, people buying properties down here, you know, they see something on the internet, they lob in an offer, and the next thing you know, they own something down here that maybe they visited once, maybe they've never visited. Another common mistake that I see, and this is more on the residential side than the hotel side, is people who try to oversee construction projects remotely. Yep. If you're doing any sort of construction, whether that's like a new sink, a new shower, or a whole new home build, you need to be here.
Man, and we're actually doing what we're overseeing a construction build in Playa Grande. Like, I mean, that's a lot of what we do, but a construction build by another company. Like, we've set the contract up, the milestones and everything, just watching them, like, you know, busting their balls. I'm sure they hate us, dude.
No, you need to do that. I mean, that's what we found is, you know, we worked with three contractors so far of, you know, varying qualities. And look, it's sort of no knock on the contractor, but, you need somebody there who's a check and a balance, right? Who can walk through and say, that's not exactly right. That's not exactly what's in the plans, you know, and it's sort of through no fault of their own. I mean, we all function that way, right? If I don't have somebody else checking my work tends to be a little bit sloppier. You know, that's why when I finish a financial model or a pitch deck or something like that, I do send it to two or three people to look at just to make sure there's something I haven't missed. And so any, particularly with construction here,
you've got so many ways
all the time. It's not like a fly down every 30 days thing. Either you or somebody that you trust should be there on site checking work every day.
Yeah. Bill, why did you decide on Costa Rica and then why Playa Grande?
It's a good question. Originally we had this idea, you know, the genesis for Onda and the real estate development was twofold. One, you know, coming out of COVID, taking advantage of depressed real estate hospitality prices. And then two, also trying to take advantage of changing consumer preferences, right? Which in our case is remote work and the flexibility to, work outside of the office more frequently than you may have prior to COVID. And so when we started with those parameters, we said, look, we want to be in the same time zones as the United States if we're going to be targeting American remote workers. So take the Americas, we ruled out the rest of the world. Our next criteria was we want to be within a 4 or 5 hour flight. We want it to be relatively easy to get here. So that, you know, I think we went as far down as Colombia, but we disqualified everything further down than Colombia. We actually started looking in Mexico. And then on the advice of one of our advisors, he just said, look, you know, you guys are, you've never done a real estate deal. You've definitely never done an international real estate deal. You've never run a hotel or a bar or a restaurant. You've got enough stuff here out of your control that you're going to have to prove. If I were you, I would take geography out of the question. And this investor had experience in Costa Rica. And he said, from where I'm sitting, you know, Costa Rica is the gold standard of geographies to be investing in Central America, if not all of Latin America. And so we started doing some research and we dug in and we learned about all the things that I'm sure you're already aware of and probably most of your listeners are aware of with regard to, you know, political stability, property rights for foreigners, ability to conduct business in bank in US dollars and things like that. And what we realized is that, you know, as an investment opportunity, Costa Rica represents, you know, has a lot of qualities that, you know, none of the other countries in the region, if not the broader area, really have. And so for us, it's just safe, right? I mean, it's the highest quality geography that we could have picked that conformed to the rest of those criteria. Other things that we liked about Costa Rica were the two international airports, you know, your Juan Santa Maria and San Jose, and then I think they're rebranding it as Guanacaste Airport now out in near Liberia. Right. And if you look at that, you know, you've got very good access to both the United States and Canada. I think Liberia now, which we've been more focused on that airport just because it's closer to our Playa Grande hotel. But Liberia, I think, services 18 U.S. cities. direct, right? I mean, it's wildly convenient. I mean, as far as Minneapolis, I think it's about a 4.5 hour flight from Minneapolis. It's 4.5-ish to New York. The West Coast is a little bit longer, but man, if you're in Austin or Miami, you can't beat it. It's a 2 hour and 45 minute flight. You land, you're at a 6-8 gate airport in the middle of a field, and, you know, hour long car ride, and you're at the beach. You know, and then when it's time to go home, you get back to the airport and security and customs are a breeze. And yeah, you go home. So anyway, you know, there's a number of other reasons, but I think those are the main points on why Costa Rica. And then why Playa Grande? Actually, we actually looked at the international arrival statistics that the government publishes for both airports. And while the San Jose airport has, you know, strong, steady growth, it's a mature airport, right? I mean, just can't be seeing double-digit year-over-year growth. Whereas when we looked at the Guanacaste Airport, we did notice that over the last 10 years, it has seen some really, really tremendous growth. And tremendous growth from, you know, not our exclusive target demographic, but definitely our core target demographic, which is those American remote workers, right? Liberia primarily services the United States and Canada. I think there's one or two flights to Europe. But, you know, you can't even fly within Central and South America from the Liberia Airport. So we saw that. We liked the trend that we were seeing there. We did some more research on Guanacaste and decided that it was definitely sort of the most up-and-coming area, in our opinion, in Costa Rica. And so we drew about an hour and a half radius around the Liberia Airport. We said, hey, we want to be on the beach. So we essentially looked at, like, what beaches are within an hour and a half drive of that airport. And then we worked our way down the beach. You know, I started up in Playa Hermosa, Playa del Coco, spent some time in Flamingo, then Tamarindo, then Nosara and Samara, which are probably getting a little bit outside of that hour and a half radius. And, you know, yeah, I was in Tamarindo and somebody said, actually, one of the first hotels I looked at was in Playa Grande. I looked at it, it wasn't a good fit. And I kind of looked at the beach and I earmarked, I said, oh, this is, you know, this is nice. It didn't really jump out because I had looked at a bunch of hotels that day. I was back, I was living in Tamarindo and I was explaining what we were looking for. And a guy who actually now is our head surf instructor at the hotel, he's like, I've lived in Playa Grande, you know, for 10 years. And now he's like, I think there's this hotel that's exactly what you're looking for. You should go look at it. So we did a little day trip over to Playa Grande and we saw the hotel and, you know, it was really fantastic. You know, we sort of said, okay, this could be a good fit. Let's learn more about this area. Spent some time over there, got to know the other businesses, sort of the vibe of the area, you know, the other hotels and restaurants and things and what there is to do and what the main draws are. And yeah, we sat down, we said to ourselves, you know, this could be a really great home for us. And so, yeah, we bought that hotel in July of 2021. We've never looked back. I think Playa Grande was the right place for our first hotel.
I agree. I mean, what are the destinations, just because I know a lot of people listening here, you know, a lot of people are looking to potentially invest into like a boutique hotel down here or, you know, just even a vacation rental. I mean, what other destinations were you considering? I mean, which one were strong candidates behind Playa Grande?
You know, at the time, like I said, I mean, it was that list along the coast. We made an offer. I think our first offer was on a place up in Playa Hermosa. We liked, you know, the vibe probably wasn't quite the right fit for us. We're going for people in their 20s and 30s and 40s who are remote workers. It's a little bit different of a vibe in Playa Hermosa, but it's a beautiful beach, a beautiful area. What we loved about that was, one, proximity to the airport. I mean, it's
25 minutes, dude. It's insane.
It's very close to the, I mean, that was the main sort of pro for us there. And the second thing that we liked, you know, the opportunity was great. It was a really interesting building with a really interesting history, you know, that we could have gotten a great deal on, that we could have done something really, really cool with, but for sort of reasons out of our control, you know, we went through the diligence process and going back to one of my earlier points, get a really great lawyer. It was one where our attorney just said, I probably wouldn't advise you to do this deal. You know, there's some stuff here that I don't love. We need to get some more clarity. And so as a result of his advice, we backed off. We did subsequently make an offer on a place in Playa del Coco, which we liked. I mean, it's more of a scuba diving destination rather than a surfing destination, which is actually what I prefer to do. I'm a scuba diver rather than a surfer. We thought we could have done something interesting there. That deal didn't quite work out for a different reason. And then, yeah, you know, again, like Flamingo would have been cool, but again, different vibe. This gets back to my point. You know, it's really hard to explain it in a podcast, but anybody who's lived in Costa Rica has been to these places, right? You hear Hermosa, you think you're Coco, you know, yes, they're all beaches and yes, they're all relatively close to each other, but they do have very distinct,
very distinct.
They cater to distinct group of travelers. And it doesn't mean that one is sort of better or worse than any of the others. It just depends what you're looking for. And so, yeah, I think we looked, we never really made a serious offer on Avellanos. Tamarindo would have been a good place for us. We made an offer on a place there. I think our bid was a little bit too low. I think you can't go wrong. It's just a matter of whatever you buy, you need to make sure that it's well integrated into the community that you choose to operate. If you open up a Tamarindo style sort of backpacker party hostel in Playa Hermosa, it's not going to do well. Right. And vice versa. Right. And Playa Hermosa is a little bit more sort of family oriented, a little bit older. If you open that right in downtown Tamarindo, you're probably going to have people who aren't having a great time just because of what's going on around them. So I think that's the most important thing, is just know the area. Right.
Yeah.
Really know it, have lived it, and then make sure that what you want to do is in alignment with that area. Don't try to shoehorn something that doesn't fit into an area that it doesn't fit with.
I completely agree. I mean, Bill, you know, it's so important when we work with customers to just really understand what their goals are and who they are and who their clients are. And that's the most thing, is who the clients are, because each beach town is, I like to say, is a different tribe. Tamarindo is different than Grande, which is different than Puerto Flamingo, Coco, Hermosa, Nosada. Every beach town is like, as soon as like, you know, you get to know someone, you can be like, ah, dude, these are the beach
towns. Yeah, you can peg them. You're a Samara person. You're a Nosara person. Yeah. You're a Pereira person. Oh, you got Rosalito all over you.
Yeah. You know, I have a client at the moment where I'm like, you're going to love Uvita and Osa. You're going to love Uvita Osa, but it's not for you at this, the business goals that you have. You know, it's probably better up in Northern Guanacaste, the Tamarindo or Playa Grande, based on what it is that you're telling me, you know. So, yeah I mean, it's you just need to know these beach towns.
I hate to harp on that point. It's one of those things that if you've been there for a day or 2 days or 3 days, it's not apparent to you. You can't be like, correct, yeah, but it's a beach town. Once you've lived there for a month, right, and you've gone to most of the bars, most of the restaurants, most of the cafes, gotten to know the people, you do start to learn that, wow, like, yes, there's these concentrations of people that are, they have a lot in common in these different places.
Yep.
So really don't overlook that.
Yeah, 100% agree. 100% agree. Well, I mean, when developing Onda, because again, you guys bought it and you also remodeled, I mean, what were your biggest challenges and what was just way easier than you thought?
Challenges, everything. I joke.
If it was easy, everyone would do it, Bill. That's what I say.
It is. You know, none of this is impossible, right? But it comes back to my earlier point, is that it takes dedication. This is not something you can do from a desktop halfway around the world. Or said differently, if you try to do it that way, you're probably not going to get to the outcome that you're looking for. You need to be here. You need to live it. You need to breathe it. I think, biggest challenges, sort of funnily, is back of the house stuff. Like compliance, accounting. Again, as I'm sure you're aware, I don't know how many of your guests are aware that Costa Rica implemented this electronic invoicing system a number of years ago, right? So it's called Factura Electronica. And so what it essentially means from a business standpoint, anytime you get a receipt, you have to get a special receipt for it to be tax deductible, right? And a lot of vendors don't want to deal with these receipts, and making sure that your accountants are putting them in the system correctly, and then it matches what's in your QuickBooks. Like, generally, you know, accounting, bookkeeping, tax compliance, legal compliance, you know, there's all sorts of little taxes that you need to make sure that you have paid. It's just different. It's a much more bureaucratic, I think, environment than maybe people are used to if you're coming from the United States, which it's not to say that it's not navigable, but again, like, don't cheap out on it. Make sure that you do have an accountant looking at things. Make sure that you do have a lawyer looking at things, double checking things, because I promise you will make mistakes and you won't realize it. Right away. It's the kind of thing that can spiral. So yeah, the other things I think, you know, like the contracting, like I mentioned earlier, do your homework. Don't just pick the first contractor that you meet. Go tour other work that they've done, get reference clients. I mean, go so far, honestly, as to ask for financial statements and like do your diligence on them. You want to be doing some reverse diligence. Again, this isn't common, but you hear horror stories of somebody, oh, and I paid 50% of my home price up front, and then they did a little bit of work, and then I never saw them again. And
I hear
take money
all the
from
time.
One project to another project. Advice that I would give is you know, your purse strings are really your primary lever when dealing with contractors. And so, you know, make sure you have a contract with them that specifies, hey, we're going to do this much, we're going to pay this much up front, progress payments, you know, holdbacks, things like warranties, all of that.
Yep.
And then, yeah, as the project is going on, you know, look, if they say, okay, the project is now 40% complete, we're going to do our progress billing and you owe us whatever, walk it. Make sure it's 40% complete. Do not send any money until the work has been done, until your satisfaction. And you know, look, we learned that the hard way a couple times, and not on anything major, but you know, we've learned our lesson and we definitely changed the way that we do things as a result of some past experiences.
Yeah. What was easier than you thought, Bill? What was going to be more difficult? You were just like, oh, wow, that was easy.
Buying the property. Buying the property was fantastic. Oh,
it's ridiculously easy, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, if you've got a good attorney, potentially a good broker, everybody involved, I mean, that, assuming you've got the money, right? if it's an all cash deal, that can be incredibly easy. I will caveat that by saying actually one more challenge that people should be aware of. And this is probably more for us, given the way that we're structured. You know, we're not an individual doing business down here. We're a company doing business, but Costa Rica does have relatively thorough anti-money laundering policies, right? So just be prepared when you move money down here into a Costa Rican bank account. They're going to ask a bunch of questions. And if you are a foreigner and they want information from your home country, they're going to want it apostille, which is like a super notarization. And that costs a little bit of money and it takes a little bit of time and you're mailing things and, you know, just budget for it. Yeah, less so from a financial standpoint, more so from a time standpoint. You know, things just, they just take a little bit longer. There's more checks that, you know, it's got to go through a couple different layers of people. But yeah, in general, buying things here is really easy, right? I mean, you can either do it in your name if it's a car or something, or if it's a piece of property. I think most people do it within a legal entity. But yeah, you can have a lawyer spin up a legal entity, open up a bank account, you put the money in the bank account, you buy it, and then it's yours. And then you got to, then the real work starts.
Then the fun starts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what are the areas of Costa Rica are you guys looking at the moment? Or what stuff would you love to have a property in and why?
So I wish I had a really fun answer here for you that I'm like, oh, I've got this super secret list of, you know, hidden gems and we're going to strategically target. And these are all the up and coming places. And you know, unfortunately for our concept, right, and this may not be applicable to everybody who's listening, but our concept is really dependent on foot traffic, right, and visibility. Yep. And so one of the decisions that we made is that we're going to sort of stick to the places that have a lot of foot traffic and have a lot of visibility, which is one of the reasons why we ended up in Monteverde for a second hotel. You know, I think if you looked at, you know, the pitch deck that I send to people, right, we've got a map and it's got like 10 to 12 pins on it. And they're all the places that you would expect, right? Yep. I mean, we're talking Manuel Antonio, Uvita, maybe Osa Peninsula, you've got Nosar, you got Samara, you got Santa Teresa, you got Puerto Viejo, you got San Jose, you got La Fortuna. It's the greatest hits, right? I mean, it's if you force ranked the top 10 or 15 tourist destinations by number of visitors, we want to be in the top 10 or 15.
You mean you don't want to push a boulder up a hill, Bill?
No. The interesting thing, look, is as with everything, it depends. Now, I think if you're doing like a retreat concept, or if you're doing a concept that has a niche market that you can really cater to, you can go somewhere really. I mean, I'm not even saying that those top 10 places are like my favorite places or the best places, right? That's just a simple business choice that we've made in order to ensure that our places have enough folks coming by every single day. If you've got a different business plan, yeah, I could be able to have a whole separate conversation about places that I would love to be able to do something so long as we could get people there.
Yeah. I mean, why did you, I think I've asked this, but I mean, Monteverde was chosen basically because of foot traffic, right? And I'm sure that you guys saw an opportunity there.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. Again, you go back to this map, and it's tough because I don't have it in front of me, but map of Costa Rica, you map all those top places, you put the two airports on it. And really what drove us to Monteverde, it was sort of a series of practical choices, right? So Playa Grande is very beachy, right? It's as surfy as beachy as you can get. Our initial plan was actually to just work our way down the coast and continue to do beach hotels. And we made a very conscious decision actually not to do that, or not to do it right now, postpone it for a bit. And what we said to ourselves was the second location should be a counterbalance. Let's go somewhere that has a different experience, right? And within Costa Rica, I can't think of somewhere that has a more different experience than Monteverde, right?
By the rainforest.
Yeah, it's a little cooler. It's a little crisper. It's rainy. There are no beaches. It's absolutely beautiful. So we liked, I mean, that kind of narrowed it down for us. We decided that Monteverde or La Fortuna would be a nice second step just because of the counterbalance from the guest experience, right? If somebody comes to Costa Rica for a week or 10 days, I'm not suggesting you shouldn't go to more places, but you could. If you do those two places, you're going to get, you know, 70%, 80% of what Costa Rica has to offer. Whereas if you work your way down the coast, I think you're going to be missing a bigger chunk. So we liked the balance, the fact that it balanced out the experience. We also liked that it provides access to Juan Santamaría Airport in San Jose, right?
So close as well.
Yeah, I mean, so I've mentioned a few times, right? I mean, the first one, we do the circle around Liberia Airport, and we cater very much to people flying into Liberia. I imagine that 90%+ of our guests fly into that airport, which means we're missing out on the majority of people that fly into Costa Rica, right? I mean, the San Jose airport actually has, I think, 2 or 3 times the number of international arrivals than Guanacaste. And so Monteverde, one, it sort of sits right in between Liberia and San Jose. I think it's about 2.5 hours to either airport. Monteverde is a 3.5-hour-ish drive from Playa Grande, which is very reasonable, right? You can do that in one day. You can go direct. And then, yeah, it counterbalances the experience. And when you take those three things, and if you think about our broader vision of building a network in Costa Rica and going to those top 10 places, you know, a step in that journey is to get access to San Jose, the San Jose arrivals. And we think, or we hope that Monteverde will allow us to do that.
Well, from what I know and what I've seen, Bill, it will. I mean, just the average daily rates and occupancy in Monteverde have seen so much more growth than La Fortuna. La Fortuna is kind of more of a mature market. Monteverde is very much more developing.
It's wild. The hotel that we acquired there, I mean, you know, they get a lot more walk-ins there. It's not people booking in advance. But every morning when I wake up and I look at the occupancy stats for the prior day, I mean, it's running at 87%+. And I'm not going to say quite, it doesn't hit 90 every night, but it definitely exceeds 85%. Like,
which is incredible. Incredible. Any hotel would bite your arm off.
Yes, exactly. You know?
I mean, so, the huge advantage of Monteverde also is, as well, is the Central and Southern Pacific you can have access to within under 3 hours, which is great. Whereas Aranao is like a 5-6 hour drive.
Exactly. I mean, in thinking one step ahead, right, is like, where do we go next, right? And now that we've acquired Monteverde, we have a lot of work ahead of us to redevelop it and to relaunch it as Onda. But in my mind, I think the next logical step would be to work our way down and do something maybe in the Jaco or Manuel Antonio area, right? And Verde kind of gives you access to that. You could have a very nice 3-location chain there and provide transportation, you know, point-to-point transportation between either those 3 locations or, more interestingly, those 3 locations plus the 2 airports.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think Monteverde's smart. I mean, I know that the guys over at Cayuga took over Senda, and I mean, they've been able to really increase their average daily rates. It's just been amazing what, you know, they've seen in Monteverde. So I think that'll continue. I mean, I understand that also with your Monteverde property, there is an investment opportunity available here. And again, the idea of the podcast is kind of just to open people's eyes to investing in Costa Rica. But I mean, give us an idea of kind of how that would work.
Yeah, and so I think I should make one point, actually. The investment opportunity is for both properties. So we put a structure in place. We've got essentially an LLC in the United States that owns an LLC here in Costa Rica. And then that Costa Rican LLC, or Limitada, owns both of these properties. And so we've raised $1.5 million of equity to date into that legal structure. That's what's done the Playa Grande Hotel. We're finally getting access to the debt capital markets down here. We're talking with Banco Nacional to give us a mortgage that will allow us to finance most of the redevelopment of the Monteverde project. But we are raising $600,000 into that structure that would provide investors with exposure to both locations, as well as future growth. We expect that there's a good chance that we would put future hotels into that structure. And essentially, the way it breaks down is we're looking to sell 6 shares at about $100,000 a share. That gets you to a $3 million or $3.3 million valuation, which we think is relatively attractive, given that the value of both properties, once they're complete, will probably be closer to $4.5 million. And the way that we structured it is that the real estate entity owns the properties, it redevelops the properties, it maintains the properties, and then it leases them out to our essentially sister company, which is Onda, which is the hotel management company. Onda pays rent equal to 25% of revenue. It's, you know, on all sales, food and bev, as well as hotel. And we think that's just a really interesting structure that allows the real estate investors to have some of the downside protection and security of real estate, i.e. hard assets, right? You're buying ground. You're not buying shares in a tech startup where if, you know, it doesn't work out, you've got nothing. So you've got the downside protection of a traditional real estate investment. Then you've got, you know, the upside potential of something a little bit more startup, right? We're not getting paid flat rent. We're getting paid rent as a percentage of revenue. So the better these hotels do, the better you do as an investor. You know, I could definitely chat your ear off about that. I've been spending a lot of time working on this. If anybody's interested, feel free to point them my way. We've got more detailed investment materials and a private placement memorandum and a financial model and all that jazz. But I don't want to bore you with that right now.
No worries. Well, I'll put all the contact details in the description. So I think if anybody is interested in knowing more, that they could reach out to you directly, Bill, and kind of chat with you about it. But I think it's interesting that, like, you know, the market here is starting to open up a little bit more to private investment, which is good to see. I mean, it always has been, but I think there needs to be more opportunity for private investment here, because not everybody sometimes wants to own a whole asset. They'd like to own a piece of something. And, you know, I call Costa Rica the new world. You know, Europe is kind of old and crusty and not really much is happening, but everything is brand new here in Costa Rica.
What I think is really interesting is the longer I stay down here, the more opportunity there is, right? I mean, especially in hospitality investing, is that,
yep.
You know, I don't want to give away, you know, too much of our secret sauce here, and I'm sure I won't, but there's a lot of assets down here. There's a lot of, you know, really good construction or opportunity for really good new construction. It's just undermanaged, right? And there's this, yep. this fat tail of properties. And, you know, again, I can share it with you or we can put a link somewhere. Whereas if you go in and you look at the ICT data of registered hotels, it's the vast majority of hotel rooms in Costa Rica belong to hotels that have, call it, between 20 and 80 rooms. It's not yep. a bunch of mega hotels. This is not Mexico. And I think there's a huge opportunity for folks who, you know, want to come down here and buy these assets, breathe some new life into them, and then professionally manage them. And I think that's the difference. I think you have a lot of these assets that have been in families for a very long time, and it's, you know, they run it the way that it's always been run, which gets them by. But, you know, we sort of entered a new era of hospitality here, particularly coming out of COVID. I think you're going to see a lot of changes in hospitality. In the same way that you saw a lot of changes in dining, call it coming out of the Great Recession, right? You have the emergence of these fast casual concepts like your Chipotle's and your Noodles and Companies and things like that. I think we're going to see something similar here in hospitality, where you've got this whole new segment emerging that grabs, you know, the best part of hotels, the best parts of Airbnbs, the best part. You know, you take a bunch of existing stuff and you mash it up in a different way to get something new. And I think, you know, there's lots of opportunity. You got to come down. You got to be here. You got to do your homework. But if you're willing to do that and roll up your sleeves, you can do very well. I think, you know, our investment is a better fit for somebody who's like, man, I like it. I believe it. I want to get a part of that. But I do have a desk job, and maybe I'm not going to have the time or resources to dedicate to moving to Costa Rica to oversee this on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. We're sort of teeing up a turnkey opportunity where, you know, you don't have to do any of that. I'm down here doing that. My team is down here doing that. On a daily basis. And yeah, you just get to sort of reap the benefits of it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's amazing just the evolution of this country, you know, from the 80s to the 90s, a lot of boutique hotels that, like, a lot of areas are seeing a renaissance now, you know, Monteverde being one, you know, even Playa Grande, you know, Tamarindo, Mamanita, all of these areas, a lot of the older hotels, you know, that were built in the 80s and 90s are now being bought and remodeled, which is great to see.
In general, I mean, I haven't been here that long. I've only been here for 2.5 years. It feels like Costa Rica is having a moment, right? And I don't know what's driving that moment. My suspicion is that it's a flight to quality after COVID. But, you know, you're just seeing, like you said, this infrastructure has been here for a long time. Now you're starting to get the guest volume into the country on a consistent, regular basis. There is all this demand. The number of people that I have reaching out saying, oh my God, we want to go somewhere. Costa Rica is at the top of the list. I think the timing is right.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've been looking at it for 18 years. I've been here for 18 years and I've seen it from start to finish. Even what you were talking about, Liberia, whereas in travel, you know, 10% of our clients went to Liberia, 90% San Jose. You know, Liberia is now 55-45 against San Jose. So it's just really interesting to see that data. You know, San Jose is still strong. Liberia is there. But, you know, just seeing average daily rates in some areas, you know, I know hotels in Mamel Antonio that have had the same rates for really 18 years, you know, because they haven't put money into their property. Whereas I know other properties, you know, that have quadrupled their rates, you know, in those 18 years.
That's one of the things that I've seen, right? Is you get a lot of deferred maintenance, right? People own these hotels and they sort of cash, we call it cash flowing them, right? Yep. You just take all the cash out and things break. You kind of, you know, a Band-Aid and some duct tape and whatever, and you put it back together without actually investing to make sure that it's set up for the next 20 years. And I think that represents the opportunity.
I agree.
Willing to come down here and catch up on that deferred maintenance, you know, like one data point with our hotel. I mean, look, I'm sort of talking hypothetically here. I might as well just talk using real numbers in a real situation. The hotel that we bought in Playa Grande was built in 2007. Original owner is actually still around. He lives in Playa Grande. I think he had it until 2011. He sold it to a group of folks from Europe who came in and they kind of cash flowed it. And I think it did well for a few years. And then it started to just fall apart. And I've got some before and after pictures I can show you. We came in and we knew we had a bit of a project on our hands, right? We came in, we didn't add anything to the building, right? We just, this is fits and finishes and fixing plumbing and fixing electrical and, you know, fixing laundry, patching the pool. I mean, it's a bunch of
non-sexy stuff.
Yeah, it's the unsexy stuff. In our first year of operation, we did 3.2 times the revenue, the old operator, right?
Yeah.
In the same footprint, this is the same building and the same number of square meters in the exact same place. And the fact that, yeah, you know, we bought a property for, call it $750,000. I think we put, call it $350,000 into it, right? But the ROI on that marginal $350,000, fantastic, right? You spend $350,000 to triple revenue. And at the end of the day, I mean, that's what our real estate model comes down to. We think we can do that over and over and over. The trick is to find places that have, you know, good bones, where most of the stuff you're doing is cosmetic and superficial. What you want to avoid is finding a place where you get in, you buy, and you're like, oh no, like I'm in over my head. We got to start from scratch.
Yes. And we see that a lot of the time where someone goes in and buys something and really doesn't understand the depth of work and basically the deep pockets that you're going to need to deliver.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I'm not necessarily opposed to tearing things down and starting over where it makes sense. In the interest of full transparency, you know, in Monteverde, there's two structures in the property that we bought. One of them is a teardown. The trick is knowing that it's a teardown going in and pricing the initial acquisition accordingly. What you don't want to do is buy a property thinking you're going to be able to use part of it and then not being able to. And you know, just sort of a peek behind the curtain here, right? I mean, we originally expected that in Monteverde, we would be able to use both of the existing structures. And we paid for a structural engineer to come in. You know, that's another good recommendation. If you've got folks coming here, get a building inspector. If the building inspector recommends specialists, get those specialists to come in. It's money very well spent. You know, we spent a couple thousand dollars on this inspection, and essentially it came back and just said something to the effect of like, you're going to spend more money renovating this building than you would starting over. You know, it was built piecemeal in the 70s and the 80s, you know, and look, it was tough. That's not what we were planning. Right. And we had to have a very hard conversation. We went back to the sellers and we said, look, you know, this is a surprise to us. Here's this report that we got. Here's what it says. And unfortunately what that means is, you know, the deal that we had, we need to renegotiate. You know, we need to take some money off it because that deal assumed that we'd be able to use both properties. And my point sharing this is that, you know, you can kind of make anything work. You just need to make sure you've done your diligence. You know what you're getting and you know what it's going to cost to get it to where it needs to be to get the ADRs to just, you know, the ADRs and the occupancy to justify the amount that you're spending.
Definitely. Well, Bill, I've kept you long enough. My last question before you, sir, if you inherited $500,000 and had to invest it in a business or real estate in Costa Rica, what would you invest it in and why? I think I know the answer, but
I would buy 5 units in Primer Canelo because no, I sort of joke, but I'm that bullish on Costa Rican hospitality real estate. Like I said, the first location that we have has been a home run. I'm fully confident that we'll be able to make the second location just as big of a home run. You know, I've already got, call it $300,000 invested. Yeah, if I had $500,000 more, I'd put it right back in.
That's smart. I mean, invest in what you know and what you have control of, man. I mean, definitely.
100%.
Well, Bill, this has been great. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us here on the podcast. I'll put all your contact details in the description for anyone that wants to reach out to Bill and hear a little bit more about the investment in Onda. But really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us, Bill.
Sounds good. Thanks so much. Hopefully talk to you soon.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed that that podcast there with Bill at Onda. Again, you know, it's kind of one of these, I would say, kind of private investment kind of companies here, investing in hospitality here in Costa Rica and doing very, very well in some great destinations there. I mean, you can't go wrong with kind of any of the main destinations here. And, you know, those guys are, you know, are looking at data and you know, running numbers, but also using their gut on where to invest here. So if you want to contact Bill, all of his contact details are in the description. Remember, if you want to reach out to us for any help on investing in Costa Rica, I think that if you've listened to any of the podcasts, getting a great team is really important here. You know, it could be the difference between, you know, making hundreds and thousands of dollars of mistakes here or millions of dollars, depending on how big your project is. But you can reach out to us, info@investingcostarica.com. That's info@investingcostarica.com. If you've enjoyed the podcast, guys, please share it. Please give us a great review online. We'd love to read them and hear, you know, it kind of motivates us to keep going. As you can see, we're on 134 here. We're not going to stop. We're going to keep doing it, getting the information out there so that, you know, it can give you guys perspective and information to make an informed decision when investing in Costa Rica. So appreciate it, guys. Until the next podcast, we'll see you soon. Bye.
The number one Costa Rica real estate and investment podcast, bringing you experts from all over Costa Rica.